The following program is produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.
What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Reach.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Sarah Hurwitz, the first ordained Orthodox rabbi in the world. We'll also have a visit from our Mevina on Jewish ethics, Amy Hirschberg-Letterman, storyteller Jordan Hill, and our expert on the international scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. Too Jewish is sponsored this morning by Temple Emmanuel, a Reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson. Call 327-4501 for information on Arizona's finest synagogue, the only full-service Reformed congregation in southern Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. A strange issue reemerged in Israel this past week. One that's kind of hard for people who aren't intimately involved with it to grasp, but that has pretty big implications for Jews everywhere in the world. It has to do with conversion to Judaism, that is, the way that somebody who isn't born Jewish becomes Jewish. Officially, in the Reform movement, we call people who convert to Judaism Jews by choice. In conservative Judaism, we call them converts, and in Orthodoxy, they are sometimes known by the Hebrew term gior for a man or gioret for a woman. In practice, all these terms are used to refer to those who convert to Judaism at various times. By any name, those who do become Jewish are an important part of the Jewish world today, and have been so to some degree ever since Abraham became the first Jew by, you know, conversion. In America, an increasing number of Jews by choice hold prominent positions in Jewish leadership, and they play important roles in synagogues and other Jewish organizations. A fair number of rabbis and cantors and educators today are now converts to Judaism, as are many of the spouses of rabbis and cantors. It's pretty safe to say that without Jews by choice, the American Jewish world would be a much lesser place. The funny part is that I'm often asked if it is even possible to convert to Judaism. Rabbi, after all, you are born Jewish if your mother is Jewish only, right? You can't just join the tribe, can you? Well, yes, of course you can. In spite of some of the myths out there, in spite of the fact that we Jews certainly don't go out proselytizing, the process of becoming a Jew within Jewish law, halacha, is ancient, serious, but far from impossible. It requires a strong commitment to exploring and accepting Jewish ideas, learning Jewish history, adopting Jewish practices, and becoming part of a Jewish community. All of this can be accomplished by working with a Reform, Conservative, or Orthodox rabbi, and all movements have established standards for what you need to learn, what kinds of commitments you must make in order to be accepted as a Jew. In general, outside of Israel, conversions completed by a Reform or Conservative rabbi are accepted in full by both movements as binding and complete. On a de facto basis, most Orthodox rabbis outside of Israel, in America, for example, accept most people who have completed a conversion with a rabbi from a recognized denomination, conservative or reform, who follows Jewish law in the conversion process. They accept them as Jewish. Again, outside of the land of Israel, everybody accepts all Orthodox conversions as binding and complete. Ah, but within the boundaries of the Holy Land, all bets are off. Officially, the State of Israel allows the Rabbanut, the Orthodox Rabbinate office, to determine all matters of personal status, including whether somebody is Jewish or not. On a practical basis, much of the time this has meant that conversions completed in Israel by non-Orthodox rabbis, that is, Reform and Conservative rabbis, you know, like me, are not accepted by the State of Israel. In general, there's been more flexibility where conversions completed outside the land of Israel by rabbis in the United States, for example, are accepted. Most of those have been recognized as Jews by the State of Israel. And under the Law of Return, a basic early law of the State of Israel that permits any Jew to move to Israel safely as an accepted citizen, Jews by choice have been treated as Jews by the State of Israel, provided their conversion took place outside of Israel. Got it? Is that complicated enough for you? But wait, there's more. Last Sunday, more or less out of nowhere, a bill was introduced into the Israeli Knesset that, from the perspective of the only Jewish state in the world, would invalidate conversions of anyone to Judaism if they moved to Israel. It would make it impossible for converts to be accepted into Israel under the law of return, and it would place all authority for conversions to Judaism under the control of the highly reactionary Rabbanut, the chief rabbinate. That same chief rabbinate has in recent decades tried to invalidate many Orthodox conversions even, and all Reformer conservative conversions, and has tried to mandate so many additional strictures on those seeking conversion, they essentially make it impossible for most people to complete conversion. I personally know that some potential Jews by choice in Israel were told their own conversions would not be made official until their whole families agreed to live an Orthodox lifestyle. Yeesh. That is not according to Jewish law, by the way. This bill to invalidate non-Orthodox conversions outside of Israel and turn the whole thing over to the chief rabbinate has outraged the non-Orthodox movements both inside and outside of Israel and started a firestorm within the boundaries of Klal Yisrael, the peoplehood of Israel. If passed, it will be a disastrous move that will do a great deal of damage to Israel-diaspora relations. The truth is that we are all in this together, we Jews. There aren't that many of us to start with. And disenfranchising those who have studied and practiced Judaism and made a personal commitment to the Jewish people is ridiculous and self-defeating. Frankly, it's time for all of us to protest to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel that this kind of approach cannot be accepted. Legitimate conversions to Judaism are being done with great integrity in all the major movements of Judaism. Ignoring the reality of the diaspora and our contribution to Jewish peoplehood is, well, meshuggah. To play us in on this theme of Jewish unity, then, here's Hinei Matov, how good it is and how pleasant for us to live together in unity. Do you hear that, Netanyahu? In the Abu Yudaya tradition from the Jews of Uganda.
Laba we kulyo kulundi we kusanyusa Abo Luganda okutula Laba we kulyo kulundi we kusanyusa Abo Luganda okutula Hine matovu umanaimu Cheveti ahim Yahadu Inematovu Umanaimu Cheveti Ahim Gam Yahadu Lava Wekulio Kulundi Wekusanyusa Abo Luganda Okutula Lava Wekulio Kulundi Wekusanyusa Abo Luganda Okutula Hine matovu Umanaimu Cheveti Ahim Gam Yahadu Hine matovu Umanaimu Cheveti Ahim Gam Yahadu.
That was Hinei Matov, how good it is and how pleasant it is for us to be together in unity from the Abu Yudaya, the Jews of Uganda. May the Israeli government learn this lesson about Jewish unity between us and those living in Israel on the issue of conversion law soon. If you spent any time in the Jewish world, I bet you never thought you would hear these words in one sentence: an ordained Orthodox woman rabbi. In fact, although there have been women rabbis in the Reform and Reconstructionist movements for nearly 40 years, even in the conservative movement for 25 years, most of us involved in Judaism on a regular basis figured that the first Orthodox woman rabbi would arrive just after the Messiah. And yet, amazingly, before the Messiah, when we return on Too Jewish this morning, our guest will be Sarah Hurwitz, the first ordained Orthodox woman rabbi in history. Hear her extraordinary story when we come back on Too Jewish.
Everything you always wanted to know about Judaism but were afraid to ask. A Taste of Judaism celebrates its 10th anniversary year with a brand new family class and in new locations. Taste of Judaism is free and open to all, Jewish or not, and we feed you too. Rabbi Sam Kohan and Rabbi Jason Holtz lead an open, interactive exploration of the history and practice of Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on spirituality, values, and community. Classes are offered all over the Tucson area, and enrollment's easy. Just call 520-327-4501. Taste of Judaism is an exciting learning opportunity for anyone curious about Judaism or who wants to deepen their knowledge and gain understanding of Jewish culture, history, rituals, community, and practice. The class includes delicious tastes of traditional Jewish foods. The sessions are free, but you do need to pre-enroll by calling 327-4501. This year, Taste of Judaism is offering both daytime and evening classes in Central, Northwest, and East Tucson, while introducing the new Taste of Judaism family class held at Tucson Hebrew Academy. Adults enjoy a grown-up taste class with the rabbis, while kids have their own Taste of Judaism children's program with excellent THA teachers. It's a great learning opportunity for the whole family. Call Mila Anderson at 520-327-4501.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft, and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
Chardonnay Shabbat is here. Friday night services were never this fun before. It's a loaf of good bread, a jug of excellent wine, and you, and a delightful way to begin your weekend with Sabbath fun and friendship at Temple Emmanuel during our summer Chardonnay Shabbat evenings. Join us for Chardonnay Shabbat at Temple Emmanuel every Friday night this summer. We start with a wine, cheese, and fruit pre-owned egg Shabbat reception at 5 p.m., followed by a fun, musical one-hour Sabbath service at 5:45. Celebrate summer with Chardonnay Shabbat. There's no charge or obligation. Just a lovely way to begin the weekend at Temple Emmanuel. Temple Emmanuel is centrally located at 225 North Country Club Road between Broadway and 5th. Call 520-327-4501 for more information. That's 327-4501. Or visit our website at templeemmanueltucson.org and join us on Friday nights for Chardonnay Shabbat.
We are delighted to welcome the two Jewish, our guests this morning, Rabbi Sarah Hurwitz, or really it's Rabbah Sarah Hurwitz, part of the rabbinic staff at the Hebrew Institute of Riverdale. She also serves as the dean of Yeshivat Maharat, the first Orthodox school to confirm women as spiritual and halachic leaders. She is the first Orthodox woman to be ordained as, if you want to think about it, as a rabbi or something very close to a rabbi. She graduated from the Drisha's 3-year Scholars Circle program and then studied for 5 years under the supervision of the very innovative Rabbi Avi Weiss of the Hebrew Institute of Riverdale. Earlier, she got a BA from Barnard College of Columbia University, helped create the Gender and Orthodoxy curriculum of JOFA. She was named as one of the Jewish Week's 36 under 36 people and was a top pick in the Forward 50 of most influential Jewish leaders this year. By the way, how does it feel to be a most influential 50 people in America in the Jewish world?
It feels like a tremendous responsibility, actually. It's a little overwhelming. And I can't believe that the community has picked me as somebody to carry on that responsibility.
You know, for most of our listeners, the concept of a woman Orthodox rabbi is either alien or peculiar or very exciting or somewhere in between. Can you explain the sort of graded distinction between being called rabbah or rabbi?
Sure. You know, it's a new language that we are coming up with. There haven't been women spiritual leaders in pulpit positions and in the community in general. And now that Jewish women are aspiring to become spiritual leaders, we have to accommodate that. But it has to be with the understanding that there are certain differences in the role in the Orthodox community. And it's only important to highlight the differences to explain that what we're doing is really within the realm and within the confines of halacha, of Jewish law. And so the limitations are that Orthodox women do not count in a minyan or a quorum of men when making up a minyan during prayer services. Women cannot be an aide or a witness, so they wouldn't be able to witness a conversion, a woman or man go to the mikveh and be part of the conversion process. And a woman is not able to lead certain aspects of the prayer service. But most of the job responsibilities of a rabbi overlap, and so women can be a pastoral counselor and answer questions of Jewish law nature, of halachic nature, give drashas or speeches and sermons from the pulpit, teach Torah, and generally be present for the community. And that's what I do, and so really the description is rabbi, but the title is meant to be distinct to show that there are some small differences and limitations.
You know, it's a very exciting and in a way revolutionary change, and we'll talk about this much more later, but one of the interesting Jewish legal facts has always been that in some ways there's more halachic, more Jewish legal problems with a woman as a cantor than as a rabbi. And maybe we can explore that a little bit later here on Too Jewish. Rabbi Sarah Hurwitz, the first ordained woman in the Orthodox movement in the United States.
At Handmaker's Senior Day programs, variety and interesting activities help Barbara Sanders really enjoy her time there.
They have a lot of activities that I like to do. They have ceramics, they have painting, they have sewing. We go out to the museums and to the parks, and we also go to the casino.
Handmaker helps seniors and disabled individuals maintain their independence longer than they might otherwise. Handmaker's flexible scheduling makes the Senior Day program very convenient, and Barbara feels right at home.
The staff is very nice. They take good care of you. They'll make sure that you have everything you need.
And there are other benefits, too.
All of my grandchildren have piggy banks that I've made from here, and I have a lot of ceramics in my house now because of here.
Call Handmaker at 322-7035 for more information and a complimentary one-day pass. There are new people and new friends to meet.
They're not just friendships. You know, you actually are a part of a family.
Handmaker Senior Day Program serves all faiths, centrally located on Rosemont, just south of TMC. Call 322-7035. Temple Emmanuel and the Tucson Hebrew Academy are proud to introduce a great new learning opportunity for the whole family, the Taste of Judaism Family Class, Sundays, August 15th, 22nd, and 29th at 1 p.m. At the Taste of Judaism Family Class, adults enjoy an open, interactive exploration of the history and practice of Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on Jewish spirituality, values, and community, led by Temple Emmanuel's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Jason Holtz. Meanwhile, kids enjoy their own fun program of Jewish stories, crafts, and activities. Call 327-4501 to sign up. The class includes delicious tastes of traditional Jewish food. The sessions are free and open to all, Jewish or not. Taste of Judaism, celebrating its 10th year as the most successful outreach program in the country, welcomes you. Isn't it time you came? In addition to the family class at THA, Taste of Judaism sessions are offered in Central, Northwest, and East Tucson. Call Mila at 327-4501 for more information and to register today for the Taste of Judaism family class.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or kvel, please email us at 2jewishradio@yahoo.com or call 520-327-4501 or visit our website at 2jewishradio.com. You can also get CDs of past and present shows through the website or downloading us there at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular podcasts. This week we commemorate an interesting and lesser-known Jewish observance, the fast day of Tisha B'Av, the 9th of Av. For nearly 2,000 years, Tisha B'Av was the saddest Jewish day of the year, till it was displaced for a while by Yom HaShoah, a Holocaust commemoration day. Well, Tisha B'Av, which remembers the destruction of both the First and Second Temple, and many other disasters in Jewish history, including the expulsion of the Jews from Spain in 1492 and many pogroms, Tisha B'Av again has reasserted itself in our consciousness, even in the Reform liturgy. We remember these destructions Monday night and Tuesday this week by chanting the Book of Lamentations, Echa, from the Bible, and remembering the losses of our people in the past. May we only have holidays to celebrate in the future. And yet, on Tisha B'Av, we remember a central fact. In spite of all of these persecutions, we still survive. We welcome our Mavinta, our expert on Jewish ethics, Amy Hirschberg-Lederman. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Well, immigration has been, shall we say, a highly controversial issue the last few months. It's always controversial in southern Arizona where we live, but it's been kind of front and center nationally now for months. The Jewish perspective on immigration is varied, but it focuses primarily on having the same law for the homeborn and the immigrant, opening your arms to the stranger, not letting them starve. But there's another side to that coin.
Well, it's true. You know, I think of Emma Lazarus, who, of course, wrote the beautiful prayer that's on the Statute of Liberty, give me your tired, your, you know, your poor.
Poor, you're starving, that's hungry.
Yeah, a Jewish woman who understood only too well what that really meant. And, you know,
your huddled masses yearning to breathe.
You're huddled,
free,
that's so. Right. I mean, I love the text, the biblical text, my father was a wandering Aramean.
Arameo Vedavi.
But weren't we all? I mean, at some point along the way, you know, nobody really was, you know, came from somewhere else. And I think the notion of
everybody came from somewhere else.
Right, right. Another way of saying everybody came from somewhere else. And so the notion of being a sojourner, a traveler, an immigrant, a stranger, a ger, you know, we certainly have that concept that we should love the stranger because we were, you know, strangers in the land of Egypt, that we should take care of the stranger. I mean, we have such a strong mandate in Jewish thinking. And I think that while there is not a universal or singular view about this, or anything actually in Judaism, you know, I think that it's fair to say that the majority of Jews are very sensitive and supportive of immigration rights and laws. Having said that, we're also compelled to follow the mandate, Din Malchut HaDin, which is...
Right, Din Malchut HaDin, the law of the land is the law.
And so we have a law, whether we like it or not, I mean, it's our responsibility if we don't like it, to go out there and do something about it. But we have a law now that we have to comply with, whether it's our state law or federal law. And I think that, you know, we have to balance always, as Jews, our primary responsibility to justice against also the land and the country and the sovereign under which we live. And so we're compelled to, you know, to really support our country in that way. I think that, you know, the most important thing is that we believe in tzedek tzedek, you know, justice justice we shall pursue. And if we don't feel that immigrants are being treated fairly, if we don't think that the laws that are being passed are equitable and fair, then we have to take it upon ourselves to take the next step and pursue justice to the extent that we can.
May we always pursue justice for not only ourselves and our families or those within, but those without.
Yes, amen.
Thanks, Amy. We'll talk next week.
Okay.
When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, from Two Jewish Storyteller, Jordan Hill, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. We visit weekly with a great restaurateur, Janos Weidler of Janos Restaurant and the J-Bar. Good morning, Janos.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So what's going on this summer at Janos and the J-Bar?
We've got so much going on, it's hard for me to keep it all straight, but I'm going to try. We've got our summer music series that you know about. We have our summer passports where you dine, and the more times you dine, you collect stamps for free dinners at Janos or J-Bar. Our Janos summer samplers at $19.95, our J-Bar summer samplers at $12.95. At Janos, our 10 terrific taste menu, four courses, 12 different items for $50, drink specials, wine specials. Summer's our time.
I'm starving.
Well, come on over, Rabbi.
What's the phone number for Giannis and the J-Bar?
615-6100.
And the website?
www.giannis.com. We've got all our menus up. We've got the summer music schedule up.
And don't forget all the great samplers. We will see you at Giannis and the J-Bar, J-A-N-O-S.
Thank you, Rabbi.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So you're just back from maybe not exactly an international destination, but Seattle ought to count for something.
Well, technically it was an international trip because first I was in Vancouver.
Ah, also a wonderful city.
I flew from Vancouver to Seattle, and we were talking briefly about what a remarkable Shabbat experience I had in Seattle, where among the Orthodox congregations are two Sephardic congregations, one that's essentially Greek, one that's essentially Turkish. Well,
of course, naturally, they don't talk to each other.
Of course. But in fact, they do. They all get along. They're all part of one kind of Orthodox community, and a subsection of the Orthodox community is Sephardic. And what they have in common is that they all, or their grandparents at least, all spoke Ladino and all were once residents of the Ottoman Empire. And what is the most remarkable thing to me is, A, how well many of these people have done financially who came to Seattle as penniless fishermen from Thessaloniki or Izmir or Rhodes or whatever and moved up in the world quite quickly and were then extremely generous in terms of donations to the greater Seattle community and the Jewish community. So lots of community institutions have flourished thanks to the generosity of these people who succeeded in much less than 100 years in becoming quite wealthy and substantial families. But also, in terms of sticking to their traditions, you know, the language of all these Jews was Ladino. And although very few of them speak it today, they still conduct a significant portion of ritual activities in Ladino. Mm. So, for example, they auction off the aliyahs in Ladino and with a chant that I recognize from when I was in Thessaloniki. But there's literally an auction where people talk about, you know, sank meal or cinco meal or whatever it is in Spain. I don't really speak Spanish. Right. So it's 5,000 pennies.
$5,000 for an aliyah, even on the high holidays, would be a lot of money.
Right. No, this is just a normal Shabbat morning. And then, of course, this past Shabbat, they announced Rosh Chodesh for Rosh Chodesh Av, which is a whole different subject and how they observe the 9 days as opposed to how the Ashkenaz observe the 9 days. It's also interesting. And there are all kinds of little differences, but they announced the day of Rosh Chodesh in Spanish. So instead of saying Monday or Yom Sheni, as other congregations would do, they say Lunes. And it's
very
really,
cool.
I mean, it's quite a clear continuity with their origins in Spain, which they left more than 500 years ago.
Right, in 1492, certainly no later.
Right.
Thanks, Tom, for a great visit to the Seattle Sephardic Orthodox community, and we'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
And now it's time for the old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Abe and Rivka have always wanted a son to join their two stunningly gorgeous teenage daughters, and so they attempt to get a boy one last time. Finally, after months of trying, Rivka gets pregnant and 9 months later delivers a healthy baby boy. At first, Abe is ecstatic, but as soon as he sees his son, he's horrified. It's the ugliest baby he's ever seen. Turns to Rivka and says, "This can't be my son, Rivka. Anyone can tell this by looking at the two beautiful daughters I've fathered. Have you been unfaithful to me?" And Rivka smiles sweetly and replies, "No, not this time."
That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Two Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. We welcome our Two Jewish storyteller, Jordan Hill. Good morning, Jordan.
Good morning, Rabbi. With Tisha B'Av coming up, a dark and mournful holiday, I thought I'd tell this dark and mournful story collected by Howard Schwartz. They say there was once a man who was a carpenter. And one day, a family came to him with tears in their eyes and wood in their wagon. Their beloved old patriarch of the family had passed away. And they wanted the carpenter to make a coffin out of the wood that they had. And this was especially beautiful wood. And the carpenter was very pleased to have the opportunity to work with it. And of course, he accepted the job and very dutifully and respectfully created and crafted this lovely coffin for them. And they were very satisfied with the outcome. And they took it and they performed all of the funeral rituals with it that were necessary. And they let the carpenter keep the leftover pieces of wood, of which there were actually some. And he looked at this wood and he thought it was just so lovely that it deserved to be made into something beautiful, something that could produce even more beauty. And he decided to craft it into a violin. And so he started working on it one day. And would you know it, but that night he had this dream in which the ghost of an old man appeared to him and said, "Do not work with that wood. You will forfeit your life. Do not do it." And when the carpenter woke up, he had shivers in his spine from the dream, but he ignored it, and he carried on working on that violin. And he worked day after day on it, crafting it into this beautiful instrument. And then, just as he was finishing it up, that night he had another dream, where the spirit of that old man seemed to appear again and warned him once more not to work with the wood, not to finish that violin. But once more, he ignored it, and he called his son in and had his son admire the beauty of this instrument as he put the last touches on it. But before he could play it, well, he needed to make a bow, simple enough. And so he took the last little bits of wood and he carved the stick for the bow and he attached the hairs, and it was just about ready, but he decided he would wait until the next day, since it was ready late, before he played it. And sure enough, that night, the same dream, but this time the voice warned him not to play the instrument, whatever he did, for the sake of his soul. And he woke up, and once more he shrugged, "Just a dream." And he ran down into his workshop as his son went into the marketplace to buy some veggies for the family. And as his son was away, he picked up that violin, he placed the bow on the strings, and he started to play this mournful melody, and it just drifted him off into this trance. He closed his eyes as he played, and that melody seemed to take him, seemed to pick him up and carry him. And he tried to stop playing, but his fingers wouldn't, and the window before him, it opened up, and he felt himself flung from the window, falling, falling, falling. Well, when his son came home that day, he found his father lying on the floor, unconscious, the violin in his hands. And distraught, not knowing what else to do, but acting on instinct, he took that violin, he burnt it in a fire. And as he burnt it, he could almost swear that he saw the ghost of the old man rising in the smoke and the sound of that mournful melody. His father never recovered. And that's the end of the story, passed on from the Jews of Worms.
Thanks, Jordan. We'll get another story next week. And now a word of Torah. This week we read the second portion in the book of Devarim, Deuteronomy, the remarkable Sedra Vayetchanan. Vayetchanan includes truly spectacular texts. The Shema, the central statement of God's oneness in the world. Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. Hear, Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. It's followed immediately in Deuteronomy by the Ve'ahavta, the commandment to love God with all of our hearts, mind, and strength. As if that were not enough honor for one Torah portion, Vayetchanan also includes the recitation of the Ten Commandments, a repetition, the Aseret HaDibrot, for the second time in the Torah. If you were to rank Torah portions, you could easily put Vayetchanan at the top in quality of content. After all, a portion that includes the essence of Jewish monotheism, the Shema, and the Ten Commandments, centerpiece of all Western ethics, is a pretty spectacular weekly portion by anyone's standards. It is no accident that this powerfully affirming portion is read the week after Tisha B'Av, on Shabbat Nachamu, the Sabbath of Consolation. For we take comfort in our knowledge that morality and holiness will ultimately bring justice. What more could we possibly learn about these most famous texts of our tradition? Everybody has studied them. Well, the Shema itself is really a simple sentence. Listen, Israel, God is your Lord. God is only one. A straightforward statement and one that should be easy to both understand and accept. Wholeness, holistic oneness. So simple, in fact, anyone can understand and embrace it. Although, of course, simple and true ideas often struggle for acceptance. Still, it's not a complex concept, oneness. But it is the text that follows the Shema in our weekly portion of Vayetchanan, the Ve'ahavta, that is the more subtle and in many ways more intriguing passage. For in that prayer we are commanded to love God. Ve'ahavta et Adonai Elohecha. Love the Lord your God with all your mind, soul, and heart. Darn it. You know, many things in life can be commanded, but love, it seems to me, is distinctly not one of them. So what does the Torah mean when it says we are commanded to love God? Simply that we are obligated to follow God's mitzvot, to live ethical lives, and to do so with energy and commitment. It also means that being good, morally good, is a form of love, perhaps the purest form of love. May we all find a way to express love through the righteous actions of mitzvot. When we come back on Two Jewish in a few moments, we'll get the news of Jews around the world and talk with the very first ordained Orthodox woman rabbi in history, believe it or not. Find out how that happened when we come back on Two Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Anat Hoffman, leader of the Women of the Wall prayer group and head of IRAC, the Israeli Religious Action Center of the Progressive Movement, was arrested at the Western Wall last week for the terrible crime of holding a Torah scroll on Rosh Chodesh. She's suspected of violating an Israeli high court ruling that prohibits women from reading the Torah at the holy site, the most sacred to us Jews in the whole world. Anat Hoffman was taken to a nearby police station while her fellow group members of Women of the Wall protested outside the building. Dozens of the members had arrived at the Western Wall, the Kotel, for a festive prayer in honor of Rosh Chodesh, the first day of the month of Av, as they have been doing every month for the past 20 years. As they began reading Torah, an act they have been now ordered to do at the nearby Robinson's Arch compound, another part of the wall but not so public, Hoffman was caught holding a Torah scroll and was detained. Imagine. Hoffman is one of the prominent activists for the Movement for Progressive Judaism in Israel. She was later released to her home under restrictive conditions, but has been banned from visiting the Kotel for a 30-day period. Not sure how you do that to a Jew. During the morning prayer, the Shacharit, the Torah scroll was actually in a bag, but the women pulled it out earlier than they were supposed to, apparently, and began dancing with it at the end of the prayer as they were leaving the Western Wall, the Kotel Plaza. Hoffman was arrested immediately afterwards. An eyewitness opposing Women of the Wall said the group leader was arrested for hiding the scroll under her clothes, but the women rejected that claim. How can a scroll as big as an 8-year-old child be hidden in somebody's clothes? Very good question. And I know Anat Hoffman, she's not that big. The Movement for Progressive Judaism said in response that the arrest of women on the first day of the month of Av, the month in which we remember the destruction of the temple, is a harsh reminder of the price Israeli society pays for its religious intolerance and fanaticism. The Progressive Movement will use legal and public means to build a third plaza at the Western Wall, which will be open to the entire public without sex segregation. There is a direct line between this woman's arrest and the Knesset's attempt to prevent the recognition of non-Orthodox conversions. Those who believe in tolerance and democracy must stand up against such ugly phenomena. Indeed. And a former hedge fund executive at Citibank and top budget official in the Clinton White House was tapped last week for one of the toughest jobs in Washington, stemming the budget deficit, which is already topping $1 trillion. Jacob Lew is President Barack Obama's nominee to run the OMB, the Office of Management and Budget. Lew is also an Orthodox Jew and Shomer Shabbat, Sabbath observant. He is replacing Peter Orszag, who is also Jewish, as head of the Office of Management and Budget. If confirmed by the Senate, Jacob Lew will find himself a key player as the White House tries to stem a tide of red ink. Among the key issues, the fate of ex-President George W. Bush's tax cuts, which expire January 1st, the mounting costs of entitlement programs as baby boomers retire, and the call to cut spending, even while the nation prosecutes wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. Jacob Lew's past role with Citibank will raise questions in the confirmation process. He worked in activities that suffered steep losses in the crisis of 2007 and 8 and would be limited under the pending financial regulation bill. But his work as a negotiator with Republicans on the 1997 balanced budget agreement appears to bode well for his confirmation chances. Lew is 54 years old, a top State Department official overseeing the agency's budget and economic operations at the moment. Peter Orszag, the president's first budget chief, announced his resignation last month after helping steer through Congress the massive stimulus bill and the landmark health care law. As deputy director for President Bill Clinton, Jacob Lew helped negotiate the 1997 balanced budget agreement with a Republican-controlled Congress. As in that earlier era, Republicans appear to be in position to take control of the House in the midterm elections this fall, and President Obama has said he intends to make the GOP live up to its pledge to help bring the deficits under control. And so, Obama will employ an Orthodox Jew to head the office entrusted with doing that. And Brandeis University named a new president, George Washington Law School Dean Frederick Lawrence. He replaces Yehuda Reinhartz, who had been president of Brandeis, the most obviously Jewish university in America, for the past 16 years. He's widely credited with reviving and deepening the Jewish identity of Brandeis after a controversial period. Lawrence's Jewish background is in both the Reform and egalitarian conservative movements. He has large shoes to fill at Brandeis in a challenging economic time. We wish him well and Mazel Tov. And that's the news of Jews around the world. We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish Rabbi Sarah Hurwitz, part of the rabbinic staff at the Hebrew Institute of Riverdale and the first ordained woman in the Orthodox movement in the United States. She serves as Dean of Yeshivat Maharat, the first Orthodox school to confirm women as spiritual and halachic leaders. Do you teach both men and women in equal settings?
Yes. I give sermons on Shabbat morning from the pulpit to the entire congregation. We have an 850-family congregation. And both men and women attend my classes equally. In fact, I think women started coming to me more for pastoral and Jewish halachic-related questions, but as I've built relationships with families, both men and women have come to me equally for issues or situations they wanted to discuss through.
That sounds you know, shockingly close to the congregational rabbinate for any rabbi in any congregation. Besides the specifics that you cited, the halachic distinctions about you're not counted in the minyan, you can't be an aide on a ketubah, you can't be a witness for a legal document or in a court, and there's parts of the service you can't lead. Are there really any other distinctions in the role that you play and what a male would play on the rabbinic staff at the Hebrew Institute of Riverdale or another Orthodox congregation?
I really don't think there is. Every leader, every rabbi, every spiritual presence brings their own unique qualities and their own abilities, and I think that's true for everybody, be it men or women. And I think that there are people who feel more comfortable with a woman and more comfortable with a man. I think our congregation is blessed that they have the choice. and really my hope and goal is that eventually, as has really happened in my congregation, people will turn to me not because I'm a woman, but because I have a certain presence and wealth of knowledge that they're interested in leaning on.
You know, I'm part of a movement that's ordained women for closing in on 40 years. And what we've always said, and then the conservative movement began to ordain women in the 1980s. But for a long time, everybody said, well, you know, that's all fine, but boy, you'll never see an Orthodox woman rabbi. What was it that prompted you to decide to challenge that, or do you see it as a challenge?
I don't know if I see it as a challenge. I just always had thought I have a right to be a spiritual leader, and it hasn't ever been about challenging the system. For me, it's been more about fulfilling a calling. I can't really imagine doing anything else with my life, and I just, with one foot in front of the other, try to get all of the obvious criteria filled that would make me an acceptable rabbah. So I pursued a career path that I had to carve out for myself.
Sort of a tricky question. Halachically speaking, in Jewish law, the objection to women leading parts of the service is a principle called kol isha erva. The voice of a woman leads to licentious conduct, or it might do so. How do you feel about that particular halachic principle?
It's certainly a principle that I've studied in depth, and I think actually the principle is talking about women's singing voices, and mainly actually in a non-spiritual sense. I think there are originally the problem that rabbis had was with a woman's speaking voice. And then ultimately it became clear that it was really only a woman's singing voice. And then there was a tshuva, some response that was written that said the real problem is the licentiousness of a woman's singing voice. And if they're singing in a nightclub or in a sexual way, then that is really ko'olisha. But if they're singing praises to God in a sanctuary, in a synagogue, then Koalisha isn't as much of an issue. You know, I don't have a good voice, so it's not my problem.
You're not going to suddenly break out in song.
No, although I do try to inspire other women to sing loudly from the women's section by raising my voice, but nobody wants me to lead davening services for them.
So I'm going to ask maybe a challenging question. There's been a great deal of press on the subject of your ordination. There was sort of a kind of a give and take in terms of the specifics of your title when this all came down. Has anybody approached you in objection, and how do you respond?
Yeah, there has been lots of objections. The way I respond is just to keep moving forward. I feel very secure in my orthodoxy and my commitment to my community, my commitment to God. And so that helps, because my guiding principle is that whatever I'm doing is within the realm of Jewish law, of halacha. And I have my eye set on greater goals, which is to not only to inspire women to desire this as a career path and to give them an opportunity to pursue it as a career path. And I guess my greatest contribution has been opening up Yeshiva at Maharat, which gives other women a way to pursue a path of spiritual leadership without having to carve it out for themselves like I had to do.
Would you like to lead your own congregation?
Who knows where this will take me? I'm pretty happy where I am now.
I'm not trying to cause problems, you understand?
No, I think every rabbi has or spiritual leader has a goal of leading their own congregation one day. So it's certainly something I've thought about, but it's it's not where I'm at right now. I'm really enjoying leadership in partnership with Rabbi Stephen Exler, my co-rabbi, under the leadership of Rabbi Weiss.
Do you think that it makes a difference whether you're called Rabbah or Rabbi?
I there are distinctions. I think, as I said, we're creating a new language, and I think at least in the Orthodox movement that distinction is different. That distinction is important to show that there are slight differences between the roles, and yet the job function is really still the same. I think the title helps me do my job better. I think having a rabbinic-sounding title allows people to understand who I am and what I'm available to do.
You know, one of the interesting things you said, and I think it reflects on the course of the rabbinate in America in general, when women began to be ordained, there was a great deal of resistance initially in the Reform movement and then later in the Conservative movement. And there was also a great deal of talk about how they were going to revolutionize the rabbinate and the hours would become less and it'd be a more human sort of profession because women saw things differently. And as we say in Spanish, I don't think any of those things have really evolved in that way. The perspective has changed because women bring sometimes a very different and fresh perspective to things. Do you see it changing the profession of the rabbinate?
Oh. Great question. As we have been forming our curriculum for Yeshivat Maarat, we've tried to be mindful that we're training women, we're training a new kind of spiritual leader, and we're trying to think about what pieces to put in place to accommodate the fact that we're training women specifically. One goal we have down the road is to offer childcare for women so that they can focus on their studies knowing that their children are close by. But that's down the road. I think it's something we're definitely mindful of, but don't necessarily have the tools right now to put into place.
You know, I almost hate to bring it up, but, you know, that's part of the fun of it. Certain of the national organizations threatened to censure Rabbi Weiss for ordaining you. There were some negotiations and so on. On a feeling level, how does that seem to you?
I guess on one hand, it's exciting that the world is taking women's leadership and women's learning so seriously enough that they're perhaps a little nervous about the progression. It was a difficult time in my life, and I won't lie that there was definitely a few low moments, but I was able to get through it with a great support, a network of support. You know, Rabbi Weiss really treated me as an equal and involved me in every single discussion that took place with the rabbinic body, and that was gratifying because it meant that we were trying to carve out a new path and role together as a team.
Rabbi Hurwitz, what's the best way for people to follow your career now? Can they find you online?
Yeah, I do have a blog called morthodoxy.org. We've taken a hiatus for a few months, but a few rabbis and myself blog every day.
So it's orthodoxy.org?
Orthodoxy.org.
That can't be too hard to find. Okay.
Right. And you can read some articles. it's not so hard to find me these days.
No, not hard at all. Well, mazel tov on your ordination, on your position, and on your sort of pioneering place, really, in Jewish history.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll get a final musical play out and find out about next week's guest on Too Jewish.
Temple Emmanuel and the Tucson Hebrew Academy are proud to introduce a great new learning opportunity for the whole family, the Taste of Judaism Family Class, Sundays, August 15th, 22nd, and 29th at 1 p.m. At the Taste of Judaism Family Class, adults enjoy an open, interactive exploration of the history and practice of Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on Jewish spirituality, values, and community, led by Temple Emmanuel's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Jason Holtz. Meanwhile, kids enjoy their own fun program of Jewish stories, crafts, and activities. Call 327-4501 to sign up. The class includes delicious tastes of traditional Jewish food,
The sessions are free and open to all, Jewish or not. Taste of Judaism, celebrating its 10th year as the most successful outreach program in the country, welcomes you. Isn't it time you came? In addition to the family class at THA, Taste of Judaism sessions are offered in Central, Northwest, and East Tucson. Call Mila at 327-4501 for more information and to register today for the Taste of Judaism family class.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Next week, our guest will be Gideon Aronoff, president of HIAS, the prominent Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, the principal Jewish group working on immigration today. Our playout this morning, the day before the commemoration of Tisha B'Av, comes from the beautiful haunting song Al Taster Panecha Mimeni in a jazzy version. Do not turn your face away from me, God, in my time of need. My friends, have a great Sunday morning and a Shavua Tov, a week, we pray, of peace.
The preceding program was produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.